Hi guys, my name is Arya, and I welcome you all to this ethical hacking tutorial. So I have a lot to cover, and let's get started. Now, to begin with, let's look into what exactly is hacking, and let's go over a brief introduction to hacking and its different types. So hacking is identifying weaknesses in a computer system or networks to exploit its weaknesses to gain access. An example of hacking is like using a password cracking algorithm to gain access to a target system. Now, computers have become mandatory to run a successful business. It is not enough to have isolated computer systems. They need to be networked to facilitate communication with all sorts of external businesses that exist out there. Now, this exposes them to the outside world and hacking as a whole. Now, hacking means using computers to commit fraudulent acts such as privacy invasion, stealing corporate and personal data, cybercrimes, and all sorts of stuff. Now, cybercrimes cost many organizations millions of dollars every year, and businesses have actually realized the need to protect themselves against such attacks because of the losses that have incurred on their neighboring companies. Now, before we go ahead, let me just familiarize you guys with some of the most commonly used terminologies in the hacking world. So firstly, who is a hacker? Now, a hacker that you see on your screen is this black person out here. A hacker is a person who finds and exploits the weakness in computer systems and or networks to gain access. Hackers are usually skilled computer programmers with in-depth knowledge of computer security. Now, hackers are classified according to the intents of their action. Now, the first type of hackers are called white hat hackers. Now, a white hat hacker is also known as an ethical hacker. Now, this type of hacker is a hacker who gains access to systems with a view to fix the identified weakness. They may also perform sorts of penetration testing and vulnerability assessment. And the most important part to take note about an ethical hacker or a white hat hacker is that they get prior information from the company or the target that they are hacking into. So this is what actually sets them apart from a cracker or a black hat hacker. Now, a hacker who gains unauthorized access to computer systems for personal gains, that person is called a black hat hacker. The intent is usually to steal corporate data, violate privacy rights, transfer funds from bank accounts, and more such malicious stuff. Then there is also a blend of both called the gray hat hacker. So a gray hat hacker is a hacker who is in between ethical and black hat hackers. He or she breaks into a computer system without authority with a view to identify weaknesses and reveal them to the system owner in return for some bug bounty. So companies like Google, for example, actually put out a lot of bug bounties. Now, bug bounties are basically telling the public that you are free to actually find a bug in my system. And if you do so and tell me about it, I will reward you. So that is what a bug bounty is. Now, cybercrimes is the use of computers and networks to perform illegal activities, such as spreading computer viruses, online bullying, and performing unauthorized electronic fund transfers. Most cybercrimes are committed through the internet, and some cybercrimes can also be carried out using mobile phones via SMS and online chatting applications. Now, there are a bunch of types of cybercrimes which I have actually discussed in my previous video called What is Cybersecurity and What is Ethical Hacking? So you all can look up that. Now, let me just get to the point of explaining what exactly ethical hacking is, unless you've already understood it. Now, ethical hacking is identifying weaknesses in computer systems and or computer networks and coming with countermeasures that protect the weakness. Now, ethical hackers have some goals that they need to meet if they're working for a company. Firstly, they need to protect the privacy of the organizations from being hacked. Secondly, they have to transparently report all the identified weakness in a computer system to the organization. Thirdly, they have to inform hardware and software vendors that are catering to the company of the identified weakness and how they can be patched. So these are the three main goals of an ethical hacker. Now, why is an ethical hacker very important for a company? Well, firstly, information is one of the most valuable assets of an organization. Keeping information secure can protect an organization's image and save an organization a lot of money. This is because hacking can lead to a loss of business for organizations that deal in finances, for example, PayPal. Now, ethical hacking puts them a step ahead of the cyber criminals who would otherwise lead to a loss of business. So basically, an ethical hacker would try to mimic a hacker and see what all vulnerabilities that he would find. For suppose PayPal. PayPal has a lot of ethical hackers working for them. So they are constantly trying to find any sort of bugs that might be in their payment gateway, which is actually letting fund being transferred without being validated. So that could be a bug. So an ethical hacker's job is to actually identify that bug and patch it up. before any cyber criminal actually finds that bug and uses it for his own malicious intents. Now, the legality of ethical hacking. Now, let me take a moment to actually talk about this topic. Now, ethical hacking is legal if the hacker abides by all the goals that he has to meet that we had just discussed. Now, the International Council of E-commerce Consultants, or the EC Council, provides a certification program that tests an individual's skill. Those who pass the examinations are awarded with certificates, and the certificates are supposed to be renewed after some time. Now, our course at EduReca, that is the ethical hacking course, is completely aligned to the CHV10. So y'all can go ahead and check that out if y'all want to become an ethical hacker, because that will certainly guide you as to how you can achieve that certification. Okay, now moving on. As an ethical hacker, you will be dealing with a bunch of security threats all the time. So it's very necessary that you know what exactly a security threat is and what kind of security threats exist. Now, a computer system threat is anything that leads to loss or corruption of data or physical damage to the hardware and or the infrastructure. Knowing how to identify computer security threats is the first step in protecting computer systems. The threats could be intentional, accidental, or caused by natural disaster. Now, in this section, we are going to talk about all sorts of security threats, and we are going to talk about the types of security threats. So what exactly is a security threat? Now, a security threat is defined as a risk that can harm or potentially harm a computer system or an organization. The cause could be a physical one, such as someone stealing a computer, or it could be a non-physical one, such as a virus attack. Now, these are the two kinds of threats that are existing out there. It is physical threats and non-physical threats. Now, there are also different kinds of physical threats. Now, let's look into the types of threats. First, it is internal threats. Secondly, it's external threats. And third is human threats. Now, let's go over them one by one. So firstly, let's look at some examples of internal threats. A fire that is inside the system, or some unstable power supply, or humidity that is actually accumulating and becoming dewdrop somewhere or malfunctioning your system. Then we come to external threats, which include stuff like lightning striking down your house, floods, and earthquakes. So these are the types of external threats. So the last kind of threats that we have is human threats. Now, human threats include theft or vandalism of the infrastructure or the hardware, disruptions or accidentals and unintentional errors that cause your computer system to malfunction. Now, let's move on to non-physical threats. Now, these are the kind of threats you, as an ethical hacker, will be dealing with much more. So, non-physical threats is completely your forte. So, non-physical threats include loss or corruption of system data, or disruption of business operations that rely on computer systems, or the loss of sensitive information. Then, non-physical threats can also include illegal monitoring of activities or computer systems, then cybersecurity breaches of all sorts, and other stuff like viruses, trojans, worms, spyware, keyloggers, adwares. There's so many other stuff. Even denial of service attacks come under non-physical threats. So basically, you get the idea that anything which doesn't have a physical form, like a computer virus or worms or a DDoS attack, is a non-physical threat. Now, to protect an organization against non-physical threats, there are things that you could do. So firstly, as an organization, to protect your computer system from the previously mentioned threats, an organization should have a logical security measure in place. Now, logical security measures could include stuff like antiviruses, or cybersecurity measures like some incident response system that you have for your organization for such stuff. Now, to protect yourself against viruses and trojans and worms and all sorts of stuff, an organization can use antivirus softwares. Now, in addition to antivirus software, an organization can also have a control measure on the usage of external storage devices and visiting websites that is most likely to download unauthorized programs onto the user's computer. Thirdly, unauthorized access to computer systems resources can be prevented by the use of authentication methods, and the authentication method can be in the form of user IDs and strong passwords, smart cards, and biometrics of sorts. Last but not the least is the installation of intrusion detection or intrusion prevention systems, that is your IPS and IDS. Now, these can be used to protect against denial of service attacks, and there are other measures too that can also be used for denial of service attacks. So these were some of the preventive measures that you should take for non-physical threats. Now, it is not necessary for you to become an ethical hacker to take all these preventive measures, Now, you sitting at home and watching this video can do this actually very simply by just using a virtual private network whenever you're browsing the internet, or using a very good antivirus system that you've actually paid for, because nothing actually good comes free. Let's remember that. Now, I digress and let's move on. Okay, now let's talk about the skills that you would need to become an ethical hacker. So firstly, you need to be good at programming. Now, a programming language is a language that is used to develop computer programs. And there are plenty of examples like HTML, JavaScript, Python, PHP. And you should be proficient at quite a few of these. I'll tell you why very soon. So secondly, you should also have a very good and in-depth knowledge of operating systems, especially because you'll be working on Linux mostly if you're an ethical hacker. Now, you should know how to go about the command line that exists in Linux and all the bash commands, because you'll be extensively using them for your networking purposes. Which brings me to my third point, that you should be proficient at networking and should know the ins and outs of how a packet actually gets delivered from your computer to a target system. So three things: programming, operating systems, and networking. These are the three things that you'll be basically playing around with every day as an ethical hacker. Now, many people normally ask, what programming languages should I learn if I'm trying to become an ethical hacker? Well, there is no one answer, because you'll be dealing with a bunch of services. So it would be smart of you, as a person pursuing ethical hacking, to know at least one example of all the types of languages that exist out there. For example, take HTML. So you could learn HTML for actually knowing how web pages work, which will help you because it's a cross-platform language. And it is basically good if you're actually targeting web hackers. Now, login forms and other data entry methods are used using HTML to get these form types of data. Now, you could also learn PHP, which is a great server-side language and is widely used over the internet. And knowing PHP will actually help you exploit weak PHP code. So if, suppose, a company has some very weak backend and you as an ethical hacker have to test out their backend, you should be proficient enough to know what the language is doing and where the discrepancies in the code exist, because you wouldn't know that if you're not proficient at PHP. Same goes for databases. Now, you should definitely know some PostgreSQL and some NoSQL, along with some SQL, of course, because SQL is the most commonly used. But as an ethical hacker, you'll be working with these three types of databases. So it would be pretty helpful to know all these types of languages, like MySQL is a must. Then also knowing some bash scripting, because you'll be working on Linux and most of the times you'll be tinkering around with tools and you'll be trying to customize them to meet your own needs. So you should learn all sorts of programming if you're trying to become an ethical hacker, because there is no single language that you'll be working on. Now, where else is programming actually used when ethical hacking? Many people ask me, after asking what programming language should I use there, why should I learn programming when I'm doing ethical hacking? Now, let me just try and explain that. Now, firstly, hackers are the problem solvers and tool builders of the company, and learning how to program will help you implement the solutions to problems that you find in the company's security. Now, it also differentiates you from script kiddies who actually use pre-made tools to actually hack into systems. So those are the people who are just practicing hacking and they already use pre-made tools like Metasploit and MITMF frameworks to actually pull off some hacking gimmicks. Now, writing programs as a hacker will also help you automate many of the tasks which would usually take a lot of your time to complete. So time saved is money made. And thirdly, writing programs can also help you identify and exploit programming errors in applications that you will be targeting. Now, last but not the least, you don't have to reinvent the wheel all the time. There are a number of open source programs that are readily usable out there, but it is always useful that you can customize already existing applications and add your own methods to suit your needs. And that would be impossible if you had no idea of how to program. So there you go. I gave you four very good reasons as to why you should learn programming as an ethical hacker or person who is trying to pursue ethical hacking as a career. Now, let's go over the different types of tools that ethical hackers use on a day-to-day basis. So the first tool that we are going to talk about is NetSparker. Now, NetSparker is an easy-to-use web application security scanner that can automatically find SQL injections, cross-site scriptings, and other vulnerabilities in your web application and web services. and it is available as an on-premise and a software as a service solution. Now, its features include dead accurate vulnerability detection with unique proof-based scanning technology. It is also known for its minimal configuration required. The scanner automatically detects the URL, rewrites rules, custom 404 error pages. Then is the REST API for seamless integration with the SDLC bug tracking. And it is also a fully scalable solution. It can scan 1,000 web applications in just 24 hours. Okay, so the next tool that we're going to be talking about is Burpsuit. Now, Burpsuit is a useful platform for performing security testing of web applications. Its various tools work seamlessly together to support the entire penetration testing process. It spans from initial mapping to analysis of an application's attack surface. Now, its features are that it can detect over 3,000 web application vulnerabilities. It can scan open source softwares and custom-built applications. It has an easy-to-use login sequence recorder and allows the automatic scanning. And it can also be used for reviewing vulnerability data with built-in vulnerability management. It also easily provides wide variety of technical and compliance reports. And it can also be used for detecting critical vulnerabilities with 100% accuracy. It can be used for automated crawl and scan, advanced scanning features for manual testers. And it is also a cutting-edge scanning logic. Now, the next tool that we're going to be talking about is Nmap. Now, Nmap is a reconnaissance tool. Now, reconnaissance is the first phase of ethical hacking. So in reconnaissance, we are actually trying to gather all the information, and Nmap is a brilliant tool for doing that. It can tell you about the domain name server. It can tell you how a packet is actually reaching the target system. It can determine what kind of an operating system the target system is using, which is basically footprinting. It can also do some very basic fingerprinting that is trying to figure out how a packet reaches, which I just said. What is the server information? Like, when was the server created? Whose name is the server under? Where is the server located? So all sorts of information gathering stuff. Nmap is a brilliant tool. Now, the next tool that we're going to talk about that ethical hackers use on a daily basis is Acunetics. Now, Acunetics is a fully automated ethical hacking solution that mimics a hacker to keep one step ahead of malicious intruders. The web application security scanner accurately scans HTML5, JavaScript, and single-page applications. It can audit complex, authenticated web apps and issue compliance and management reports on a wide range of web and network vulnerabilities. Its features include the following. Firstly, it can scan for all variants of SQL injection, cross-site scripting, and around 4,500 additional vulnerabilities. Also, it detects over 1,200 WordPress core themes and plugin vulnerabilities. It is fast and scalable and crawls hundreds and thousands of pages without any sort of interruption. It integrates with popular WAFs and issue trackers to aid in the SDLC process. And it is always available on-premise as a cloud solution. Okay, now the next tool that we're going to talk about is Hashcat. Now, Hashcat is a robust password cracking ethical hacking tool. It can help users to recover lost passwords, audit password security, or just find out what data is stored in a hash. Its features include that it is open source platform. It is also cross platform. It allows utilizing multiple devices in the same system. It can utilize mixed device types in the same system. It supports distributed tracking networks, and it also supports interactive pause and resume. It supports session and restore, and there's also a built-in benchmarking system, and it also integrates thermal watchdogs and supports automatic performance tuning. And okay, so the last tool that we're going to be talking about that ethical hackers use almost on a daily basis is called SQL Map. Now, SQL Map automates the process of detecting and exploiting SQL injection weaknesses. It is open source and cross-platform, and it supports the following databases. So it supports MySQL, Oracle, PostgreSQL, MS SQL servers, MS Access, IBM DB2, SQLite, Firebird, Sybase, and a lot of other database types. It also supports the following SQL injection types. So these are Boolean-based blinds, time-based blinds, error-based, union query, and stacked queries and out-of-bands. So these are some of the tools that are being used by ethical hackers on a daily basis to do their job. Okay, now moving on. Let's talk about social engineering. So what exactly is social engineering? Now, social engineering is the art of manipulating a user or a bunch of users of a computing system into revealing confidential information that can be used to gain unauthorized access to a computer system. The term can also include activities such as exploiting human kindness, greed, and curiosity to gain access to restricted access buildings or getting the user to installing backdoor software. Knowing the tricks used by hackers to trick users into releasing vital login information, among others, is the fundamental in protecting computer system. Now, social engineering is a very widely used process. So as an ethical hacker, you should know what is exactly social engineering and how it is done. So basically, social engineering is manipulating people, as I just said. And you must all know that people are very easy to manipulate in this world because, one, they contain emotions. And secondly, emotions can wave on from one form to the other. One day you're sad, the other day you're happy. And a hacker very well knows how to actually manipulate you into giving out your information based on whether you're happy or sad. So as an ethical hacker, it is very important for him to educate his organization's people on how to not get social engineered and giving up their social credentials. So this is why I've included the topic of social engineering. Now let's go over the phases of social engineering. So social engineering is divided into five distinct phases and they form a cycle. So this cycle is generally used by hackers when they're performing social engineering on you. So you as an ethical hacker should also know these five steps. So first step is gathering information. Now, this is the first step, and the hacker learns as much as he can about the intended victim. The information is gathered from company websites, other publications, and sometimes by talking to the user of the target system in itself. The next part is actually planning your attack. Now, the attacker outlines how he or she is intending to attack the target victim, depending on the information that he has gathered from the first phase. Now, after the person has decided how you are going to be attacked, he is going to try and acquire all the tools to attack you. So these include computer programs that an attacker will be using when launching the attack. So this can be something as simple as Metasploit to something as complex as a fully catered ethical hacker built penetration testing tool. Now, the fourth part is actually performing the attack. So the weaknesses that have been found through all the information gathering is attacked on with the tools that have also been gathered. Now, the information gathered during the social engineering tactics, such as pet names, birth dates of organizations, founders, and all sorts of information is used in attacks such as password guessing. So after the information is gained, the cycle keeps going on and on, and even more crucial information is passed down to the hacker. Now, social engineering techniques can take many forms. Now, these are the forms that you will normally see. So first is the familiarity exploit. Now users are less suspicious of people they are familiar with. That's normal human tendency. An attacker can familiarize him or herself with the users of the target system prior to the social engineering attack. And now the attacker may interact with the user during meals, when the user probably goes out for a smoke break, and he or she may join on social events while they're out for a drink and something like that. This makes the attacker familiar to the user. And let's suppose that the user works in a building that requires an access code or card to gain access. Now, the attacker may follow the user as they enter such places, and the users are most likely to hold the door open for the attacker to go in as they are familiar with them. Now, the attacker can also ask for answers to questions such as where you met your spouse or the name of your high school math teacher. And the users are most likely to reveal the answer as they trust the familiar face. This information could be later on used to hack email accounts, other accounts that ask similar questions if one forgets their password. Now, the second technique is an intimidating circumstance. Now, people tend to avoid people who intimidate others around them. Using this technique, the attacker may pretend to have a heated argument on the phone or with an accomplice in the scheme. The attacker may then ask the user for the information, which would be used to compromise the security of the user system. The users are most likely to give the correct answer just to avoid having a confrontation with the attacker. This technique can also be used to avoid being checked at a security checkpoint. Now, the third kind is phishing. Now, this technique uses trickery and deceit to obtain private data from users. The social engineer may try to impersonate a genuine website such as Yahoo or Facebook and then ask the unsuspecting user to confirm their account name and password. This technique could also be used to get credit card information or any other valuable personal data. Now, the next form is tailgating. This technique involves following the users behind as they enter restricted areas. As a human courtesy, the user is most likely to let the social engineer inside the restricted area. And the third one is, of course, human curiosity and emotions as a whole. Using this technique, the social engineer may deliberately drop a virus-infected flash disk in an area where the users can easily pick it up. The user will most likely plug the flash disk into the computer, and the flash disk may contain auto-running viruses, or the user may be tempted to open a file with a name, such as the employer re-evaluation report, which may actually be an infected file. And above this, human greed is also a major thing in social engineering. Many people are lured in by making promises such as, I'll give you so much money if you click this link, or you can win a game and win so much money, which is just general forms of social engineering to get your credentials or cookies. Now, there are a bunch of countermeasures that you can take. Now, these are pretty obvious, but let's just discuss them because we have quite a lot of time. So to counter the familiarity exploit, the user must be trained not to substitute familiarity with security measures. Even the people that they are familiar with must prove that they have the authorization to access certain areas and information. To counter intimidating circumstances, users must be trained to identify social engineering techniques that fish for sensitive information and politely say no. Thirdly, to counter phishing techniques, most sites such as Yahoo use secure connections to encrypt data and prove that they are the ones who they claim to be. Checking the URL may help you spot fake websites and avoiding responding to emails that request you to provide personal information. Now, to counter tailgating, users must be trained not to let other users use their security clearance to gain access to restricted areas. Each user must use their own access for clearance at all times. And human emotions can be helped. As we all know, humans are stupid, and there's no helping human stupidity. But still, as a general rule of thumb, never reply to any Nigerian or any African guy that is asking you for money because you just fell to kind one simple day. Okay, so those were the types of social engineering. Now, as ethical hacker, you will be dealing with a lot of cryptography. So I've also included cryptography in this tutorial. So let's go over what exactly is cryptography. Now, information plays a vital role in running businesses, organizations, military operations, and such. Information in the wrong hands can lead to loss of business or catastrophic results. Now, to secure communication, a business can use cryptology to cipher information. Cryptology involves transferring information into non-human readable formats and vice versa. Now, let us discuss what is cryptography. So, cryptography is the study and application of techniques that hide the real meaning of information by transforming it into non-human readable formats and vice versa. So let me just try and illustrate how cryptography looks like. So suppose we have some text that says, I love apples. Now, if you were to use some cryptographic algorithm that actually encrypts this text by actually shifting the letters by two, it would look something like this. So I would turn into K, and L would turn to N, O would turn into Q, V into Y, and you would have something what we call in the computing world as ciphertext. Now, ciphertext is confusing, and it is almost impossible to understand if you don't really know the key. But as an ethical hacker, your job will be mostly turning ciphertext into plain text without actually knowing the key. Now, that is exactly what is called as cryptoanalysis or cryptanalysis. So cryptanalysis is the art of trying to decrypt the encrypted messages without the use of the key that was used to encrypt the messages. Cryptanalysis uses mathematical analysis and algorithms to decipher the ciphers, and the success of cryptanalysis attacks depends on the amount of time available, the computing power available, and the storage capacity available. Now, let's go over the types of cryptanalysis techniques, or the techniques that are used to break into ciphertext. So the first technique that is used for deciphering text is a brute force attack. Now, this type of attack uses algorithms that try to guess all the possible logical combination of the plain text, which are then ciphered and compared against the original cipher. Second kind is dictionary attacks. Now, this type of attack uses a word list in order to find a match of either the plain text or key. It is mostly used when trying to crack encrypted passwords. Now, the third kind is called a rainbow table attack. And this type of attack compares the ciphertext against pre-computed hashes to find matches. So basically, you have a table of hashes, and you're constantly comparing your given hash to the hash you're trying to find. Now, let's also discuss the different types of cryptographic algorithms that have been developed over time. So the first algorithm that we are going to discuss about is MD5. Now, MD5 is an acronym for Message Digest 5. It is used to create 128-bit hash values, and theoretically speaking, hashes cannot be reversed into original plain text. And MD5 is used to encrypt passwords as well as check data integrity. MD5 is not collision resistant, and collision resistance is the difficulty in finding two values that produce the same hash values. Now, the second type of algorithm is SHA, which stands for Secure Hashing Algorithm. Now, SHA algorithms are used to generate condensed representations of messages, and these are called digests. It has various versions, such as SHA-0, which produced a 128-bit hash value. It was withdrawn from use due to significant flaws and replaced by SHA-1. Now, SHA-1 produces 160-bit hash values, and it is similar to the earlier versions of MD5, and it has cryptographic weaknesses and is not recommended for use after the year 2010. Then we have SHA-2. It has two hash functions, namely SHA-256 and SHA-512. SHA-256 uses 32-bit words, while SHA-512 uses 64-bit words. Then is SHA-3, and this algorithm was formerly known as KCCAK, and is widely used in the validation process in Ethereum, if you know what that is. Now, the third kind of algorithm is RC4, and this stands for Riveting Cipher 4, and this algorithm is used to create stream ciphers. It is mostly used in the protocols such as SSL, which stands for Secure Socket Layer, and to encrypt internet communication using WEP, which stands for Wired Equivalent Privacy to Secure Wireless Networks. Okay, now this brings us to the theoretical end of our ethical hacking tutorial, but that's it for today. Goodbye.